Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us for today's discussion. My guests today are state seismologist and director of the Alaska Earthquake Center, Michael West. Michael is also a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and came down today for the show. And also John Power, the scientist in charge of the Alaska Volcano Observatory at the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS office, right up the street here in Anchorage. Thanks to both of you for being here today. We're going to be talking about earthquakes and volcanoes in two areas of the state that are at extreme distances, the Brooks Range and the Aleutian Island. Even by Alaska standards, there's been a lot of seismic activity recently. Alaska is located in the Ring of Fire, so it's not unusual for there to be frequent earthquakes and volcanoes. But starting in April, there's been some unusual seismic activity in the Brooks Range. An area near Noatak has, since April, seen a spike in earthquakes after a 30-year quiet period. We'll look at some graphics here. This first one that you're going to be seeing is look at the earthquakes that were happening in Noatak. And Michael, I want to turn to you first to give us a brief rundown of what's been happening in the Noatak area since April, and how this prolonged ramp up in activity prompted the placement of more seismic monitors. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on since this spring and what your reaction has been.
Sure. Well, thanks for having John and I on. Certainly lots to talk about. Since late April, there have been a number of earthquakes in the Noatak area that are a little bit different from the kinds of patterns we are used to seeing across the state. Earthquakes are a common part of a lot of Alaska, but what sets the Noatak sequence apart is that we have had a whole series of earthquakes that were more or less the same earthquake, same magnitude, same place, same faulting and orientations. And that's not something we see every day. Noatak has some history of earthquakes. There was a comparable earthquake in 1981, but it's been many years now. And in late April, we had the first magnitude 5.7. In fact, there were two of them in a few minutes. And since then, we have now had five earthquakes in that sequence, each with a lot of aftershocks. Residents in the area have felt dozens of aftershocks over the past couple of months. So that's an unusual pattern really anywhere. And certainly it raises some attention since it's in an area of the state where we do have earthquakes, but they're not nearly as common.
This graphic that we're looking at right now, the second one that we've displayed, these, I don't know how else to describe them except for beach balls. That's what they look like to me. Tell us what we're looking at here and what that means.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about how to actually interpret that, but those beach balls you refer to are a way that scientists characterize the orientation of a fault. Is it running up and down? Is it dipping and whatnot? And the important thing here is that all five of them are the same. I mean, this is the same earthquake or very, very similar earthquake occurring a number of times. It's possible that they are happening a couple, you know, miles from each other along a fault. It's possible that they are in, you know, literally the same place. Possible they're above or below one another, but we don't have a good grasp on that right now.
Let's look at what the sensors themselves, because you've installed more sensors in the Kotzebue and Noatak area, if I'm correct about that. This third graphic shows what the top side of one of these sensors looks like, and I see that there's a solar panel there. Is that all the power source that it has?
Well, solar power is certainly a big part of what we do. The Alaska Earthquake Center and the Volcano Observatory operate extensive networks of seismic instrumentation, and we don't like to record data in areas where there's a lot of human traffic because humans shake the ground. So we tend to prefer remote places, and that means remote power. So yes, solar power is the primary source for operating most seismic stations in this state. There are about 400 or so stations total across the state.
And so this fourth image that we see now shows kind of the blueprint schematic of how it displays underground, how it's placed in. How large are the sensors themselves, and what's the difference between their 3 to 15 feet? How much difference is there? It seems like these earthquakes are miles deep, so does it matter that much if it's 3 to 15 feet down?
Seismometers are interesting devices. I mean, their whole purpose in being is to record vibrations of the ground. Doesn't matter whether it's earthquakes or volcanoes or animals walking by or backhoes or wind. I mean, that this is what sensors do. So if you want to record the ground, you have to be in the ground. So all of the sensors that our organizations operate are buried in the ground for that reason. It's not that you're trying to get down to the source of the activity, but you want to
isolate it.
You want to be sensitive to very small motions.
Sure, and isolate it from topside motions.
Exactly.
So what are you learning about the swarm? Because of the location, there's been questions about the Red Dog Mine. Is there any validity to concerns about that?
Well, the sequence is teaching us a lot, but it's we've had to get a handle on it because it's not an area of the state that is well monitored. That's a bit of an understatement. But so we did install a couple of new seismic stations, one in Kotzebue, one in Noatak, to help beef up our abilities to track activity. And that's helped it's helped us, you know what we know to date about the sequence. There is no reason to associate this earthquake activity with Red Dog Mine. It's actually a considerable distance, and there's no sort of cause and effect mechanism that would link these two together. Red Dog has actually been tremendously supportive from a logistics perspective and helping to monitor the area.
I would imagine that those questions have come up just because of the concerns in the lower 48 over fracking and earthquakes, and so I think that that's why we've heard some of those questions. So I'm glad that you clarified that. That's good to get that out.
It is possible undertake large operations like that, it is possible, and we do see elsewhere in the country, people are certainly aware of the fracking and induced seismicity ties to earthquakes, but that's absolutely not what's happening in this area.
All right, thank you. John, I want to turn to you now. Don't want to leave you out of the conversation.
Okay.
The recent volcanic activity in the Aleutian Islands, the image that we're going to look at right now, number 5, is wow. It's amazing, and especially in the Aleutians. It seems as though there's always at least one grumpy volcano out there kicking up. But there's been more recently 4 on yellow advisory status, 1 on orange alert, and especially one that hasn't been active for a long time. I would like for you to say this because...
Sure. The name of this particular volcano is Semisopochnoi.
Thank you.
Which, as I understand it, has a Russian origin. No, what we're seeing right now is, it's actually a record for us at the Volcano Observatory. We were founded in 1988. Right now we have 5 volcanoes that are at a heightened alert status, which is, for us, it's never happened before in the 26 years that we've been keeping track of such things. And they are Veniaminov and Pavlov on the Alaska Peninsula, Shishaldin Volcano on Unimak Island, Mount Cleveland, which is in the island of Four Mountains, a very remote volcano, and then Semisopochnoi is the recent addition to the list, and it's experiencing a fairly vigorous earthquake swarm, which has very much gotten our attention at the observatory.
How well monitored are all of them? I know that some have better monitoring than others. We're going to look at what the actual earthquakes look like from a volcanic.
Sure. Right now, we have at the observatory, like many similarly funded programs, we've struggled over the recent years with funding and so on. Currently, our ability to monitor the volcanoes is down from where we were a number of years ago, but we are doing well. We recently repaired the instruments in the far western Aleutians in the Amchitka Semisopochnoi. recently brought that back online in terms, just in time to capture not only the unrest at the volcano, but also the very large magnitude 7.8 earthquake that occurred on the 23rd of June.
That was going to be my next question. Is there a connection between all of this activity that you're seeing out there and that large earthquake?
There is, and it's an interesting question. It's one we're frequently asked. There is not a connection that we can point to at this point in time. Our knowledge, you know, given our current understanding of the way that the Earth behaves and the plates and the motions and so on, we don't see activity or a direct tie between these two events, the activity at Semisopochnoi and the magnitude 7.9. They certainly do, you know, and we have seen a number of instances where large earthquakes and volcanoes will sort of have some minor effects on one another. Big earthquakes will generate trigger small earthquakes, typically beneath volcanic or in geothermal areas. We don't see a one-to-one tie here between these two events, other than they are both ultimately the result of, you know, the overriding plate motions which make up the crust of the Earth.
Sure.
But in this case, the volcano was actually active well before the earthquake, right?
No, that's true. So. Like
interesting.
The volcano was active first in this particular instance, and it does appear that the volcano may have quieted slightly since the earthquake occurred.
Hmm. That seems unusual, because isn't the precursor usually of a volcanic or a volcano becoming more active, the precursor is usually a swarm of earthquakes, isn't it?
Well, the way I like...
there no usual way of determining this?
The way I like to describe it is when you're looking at a volcano that's reawakening, typically, or in most cases, the first thing that you'll see is a small increase in earthquake activity. And these are very different than the type of earthquakes like the magnitude 7.9 that we saw on June 23rd, or the events that Mike has talked about at NOAATAC. Typically, what we see in these volcanic environments are very small earthquakes, magnitude 1, magnitude 2. And those tend to go on for a period of, you know, some, you know, weeks to months. Eventually, you might begin to notice the volcano itself swelling. There might be increased, you know, gas, steam coming off the volcano prior to eruptions. And those are the typical things that we look for to forecast volcanic activity. And in this case, this is the reason that we are watching Semisopochnoi very carefully now is this increase in earthquake activity.
Can I interject here? Because there's something really cool, I think. It's the scientist in me kind of has to say this, but John's, you know, talking about these earthquakes that happen at the volcanoes, and one of the cool things over the last many days is we're watching the exact same data streams. So the sensors that we talked about before that record anything, whether it's from a volcano or an earthquake, the folks at the Volcano Observatory are, you know, going through that data, tracking. I mean, you've had lots of earthquakes. I mean, what do you have, hundreds in a day, probably, of these little earthquakes, and they're following those patterns and whatnot. And at the Earthquake Center, we're using those same data streams to look at the big earthquakes that aren't associated with the volcano, but are part of the process and aftershocks from this magnitude 7.9 on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty cool that you get all of that out of the same data streams.
Yeah.
But they're two very different kinds of phenomena happening.
Well, my next question is about these two different phenomena that are happening. Are they at all connected? You've got this activity happening in the NOAATAC Brooks Range region that is activity you haven't seen for three decades. The Aleutian Islands activity is something that is almost three decades worth of unusual. Mm-hmm. Is there a connection?
You want to take this, John, or me?
I'll start off, and maybe Mike can help me out.
We'll look at the fault lines here while you're
doing
that. Number 7 is our fault lines map, and that's kind of awesome to look at.
Right. Currently, the way I like to describe this to folks is to say that we're treating this as a coincidence. We've got a lot of volcanoes that are active right now. We have some very large earthquakes that are occurring, some events taking place in areas of the state that have been traditionally quiet. And we are treating it as a coincidence, although we have seen periods like this in the past when there have been, you know, increased bursts of activity. And it may be that there is a process here that we don't fully understand that could be, you know, driving some of these phenomena. And if you look at our understanding of the Earth and earthquake activity, volcanic activity in Alaska, and you look back to the 1964 earthquake, which was 50 years ago this year, mm-hmm. and think about what we understood at that point in time and look at where we are now, we've advanced a long way. And it may be that 50 years from now, or 100 years from now, we will be able to say, yes, this is happening this way, all these things are happening because of this. But there isn't something a process that we can point to today and say, this is what's causing this. It is, as I said, currently we treat it as a coincidence.
The fault line map that we looked at just a few moments ago, how well mapped are the faults in Alaska? Is it possible that there's more of them that aren't mapped, or that can new ones be forming?
This is a good one for mine.
the question of faults is an interesting one, because the Earth is absolutely riddled with faults. There are probably faults under your house. No, I probably shouldn't say that on TV. People are going to misunderstand. But the important thing is a fault is really just a fracture in the Earth. The question is, which ones are active? Which ones are, you know, have motion on human time scales and, you know, and impact us with earthquakes? Certainly in Alaska, there are huge swaths of the state where we have very limited understanding of the faulting. There are some very well studied faults in Alaska, but I think it's safe to say by national standards, there are a lot of areas we know very little about. NOAATAC is a really great example of this. Several people have asked me, well, with all of these earthquakes out there, does that mean that there's probably a fault? And the answer to that is an unequivocal, well, yes, or there wouldn't have been earthquakes to begin with. So, but it's a great example of a place where we don't know of any particular fault line, or more importantly, the history of faulting. We haven't mapped geologically, you know, the past several hundred years of activity that would allow us to say, well, this fault actually turns out to be active every 50 years or so and has a typical magnitude of some size. That's the information that we don't have. So to me, whether or not there's a fault is less important than do we have historical geologic information to actually understand what this thing does and what it's capable of.
How much of the state is sort of a seismic mystery? Alaska is enormous. Can you sort of give us an idea of how much is mapped and how much more work there is to do?
Ooh, it's a difficult question. Certainly, Alaska, from a geologic standpoint, if you look around the 50 states, we are the frontier, and there are many areas in Alaska that are highly remote where we've spent very, very little time. One of my favorite statements at one point at the observatory years ago, we had a volcano that was becoming active, and it turned out we had no geological samples from that volcano at all. And I very quickly stood up and said, we know more about rocks on the moon than we know about this particular volcano. So there are areas, you know, Alaska is a big place, we're very remote. Certainly the activity that's going on at Semisopochnoi and volcanoes in that part of the Aleutian Arc, we certainly have not spent the kind of time on the ground looking at things that we would like. Although there has been a lot of progress, you know, through the last good number of decades, and I feel like we are moving forward, and Alaska is, because of the high levels of activity, is certainly a place where, you know, the science of earth science has advanced, mm-hmm. and a lot of the advances that have come are because of the high rates of activity that we see here.
Well, I know that the 1964 earthquake was certainly instrumental in a lot of scientific attention coming forward about not only Alaska, but just kind of advancing science and what we needed to be tracking for earthquakes and geologic activity. But how do we compare to, you mentioned the 50 states, John, but mm-hmm. what about the rest of the world? How do we compare as far as what we know about our fault lines and what we're doing to monitor the activity here as compared to other places? Are we ahead of the game? Behind?
Well, certainly we're behind the game. I say that with some caution because, as John points out, there are some very legitimate challenges and issues that we wrestle with that they don't wrestle with in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. I liked John's comparison that, you know, though we have a lot of work to do on the monitoring front, there's tremendous opportunities for new scientific gains, because there's a lot of activity and there's still a lot of room to grow. We're not working on the minutiae yet. We're working on really first order, you know, fundamental questions in this state that makes it rewarding. As far as what's monitored and what's not, in a nutshell, from an earthquake perspective, it's western and northern Alaska, where we do not have nearly the same ability to track and report on earthquakes like we do in south central, up into the interior, and at least down the peninsula. Certainly the Aleutians present challenges as well, as John was pointing out. But personally, my concerns are in western and northern Alaska in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. No, the instrumentation in the NOAATAC area is very sparse, and that's why you've jumped right in and added additional monitoring stations there to track this activity.
We're certainly trying.
Let's look at this map of the Alaska Seismic Network site, and there's the yellow dots are the seismic network that's in Alaska. There's sites for adoption in red. So there's a lot of areas that I can see you're hoping to cover. Any word about when those may be in place or?
So this is a complicated figure. Maybe we shouldn't get too caught up in the details, but what it shows, there are yellow dots that represent sort of modern seismic stations across the state. And what you see is most of that is clustered in south central, up into the interior, and clustered on volcanoes in the Aleutians. So there are big areas where we don't have instrumentation. There's a national project funded through the National Science Foundation called the EarthScope US Array project, which is, over the next few years, temporarily installing an absolutely unprecedented grid of instrumentation across the state. That work has begun in earnest this summer. About 40 of these sites will be completed, and there will be 200 and some by the summer of 2016-17. In any case, it's a wonderful thing. It's an academic research project. It isn't actually the same as our backbone earthquake monitoring for the state, but certainly we are very heavily vested right now in trying to find ways to leverage that project for in-state gain. It's spectacular if there are scientific needs that are met worldwide by researchers for this data, but we'd really like to find ways to make it benefit the state directly.
Absolutely. In our last couple of minutes, let's just move to, what does this all mean? Does this indicate that we may be on the cusp of another large earthquake? It's been 50 years since 1964. Is there any sort of discernible pattern to these kinds of eruptions, or is it just as likely that it'll be 100 to 200 years before we see another one as it is 50 years?
I'll break the question down into two parts. You know, the large earthquake issue. Certainly, we are going to see more big earthquakes like the one we saw on Monday. This is kind of where we are in the world. Alaska is going to be subject to more large earthquakes. The exact timing of some, like the Good Friday earthquake, you know, there is some geological evidence that we have a ways to go before we're going to see a repeat of that event. But there are plenty of other candidates that could generate a large earthquake that would, you know, cause us a good deal of trouble.
In other parts of the state?
Okay. Or another adjacent faults. Mm-hmm. In terms of the volcanic situation, the other part of the question, you know, we are a very active part of the world there as well. Typically, we see 1 to 2 volcanic eruptions a year on average. If you look over the last, you know, 50 to 75 years, when we have good records, and we probably will continue to see additional volcanic eruptions, whether they're here in South Central Alaska or on out the chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you Michael? Know, the talk about 1964 is good, but I what scares me is not the next 1964 earthquake at magnitude 9 and change, but the magnitude 7 that occurs right in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Dutch Harbor. You know, these are all viable possibilities. And we're fortunate. Most of our big earthquakes don't intersect with population by virtue of statistics. It's like throwing darts at a dartboard. At least if you play darts like me, you don't usually hit the bullseye. And every once in a while, that, you know, you hit just the wrong spot. And that's what I am concerned about, is when the next earthquake hits one of our population centers.
Well, thank you so much for being with me, Michael West and John Power. Thanks for joining us for today's discussion about the seismic activity in Alaska.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.